Are you intimidated by wine? Are you intimidated by snobby wine drinkers? I know one or two of those. We want to demystify wine today, and let's bring in one of our favorite winers, Charlie Langton.
What are you talking about? Hi, Roberta. How are you?
Hi, Charlie. Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's got nothing to do with my birthday. We're going to be talking about wine, and who better to talk about wine than a wine expert? Take a look right there. Dean Champagne. That's his real name, too, by the way. Champagne. Spelled a little differently, but it is Champagne. He's been doing wine for 50 years probably around here, maybe longer, I don't know.
That's close.
So Dean, you've owned a wine store, you are a consultant with wine, you are just, wine is kind of your name, really, yes. Champagne anyway. So what can you tell us today about the basics? I mean, some people are very intimidated by wine.
Yes.
What should we know?
Well, there's four basic elements of wine, and those that are buying wine at restaurants or just sitting home and enjoying wine, you can use the basic four elements, no matter where you're at, to improve your relationship and also enhance the experience of wine. And many people get intimidated by wine because they don't quite understand, what do we do, where do we start? And it's very, very elementary. And we can go over those.
Let me just go basic.
Yes.
I want to go basic. What do I, if I'm having maybe a dinner or people over, let's start. What do I want, white or red? Let's just start there.
Well, Charlie, wine is an experience, is a personal experience, and you're going to get experts that tell you that if you're having a roast beef, that you might want to go with a red, or if you're having pork, you might want to go with a Pinot Noir, or poultry, you might want to do white. But it mostly has to do with your personal pleasure. If it tastes good, do it. If you want white wine.
But I've got to interrupt you right there. What if you're not a wine drinker and someone like Charlie invites you over to their house, which happened a long time ago, and I wanted to bring Charlie a nice bottle of wine? Well, I went to the wine store, and since I don't know anything about wine, they had a bottle that was over $20 and it had a picture of the Blessed Virgin Mary on it. I thought, this is perfect. But what advice can you give to someone who's a non-wine drinker to bring a nice bottle of wine without knowing what you're doing?
That's why you haven't been back.
It's a great question. And in most cases, if you're going to the local wine stores around here, they're gonna give you the right information. 65% of wine drinkers drink red wine. The rest drink a variety of white, rosé, and red, and sparkling. But the safe haven on bringing wine would be a red wine. At restaurants, it changes. But if you're giving wine as a gift, red wine would probably be an easy norm. I don't think you'd be out of context or giving somebody a wine that they dislike by giving them a bottle of red wine. On the other hand, if you have a personal preference, if you've been there before and you see that they like sparkling, you could easily, you know, change it off. But red wine is always a great go-to wine for several reasons. Number one is that it's got holding power. And thirdly, most meals will pair off with a nice Pinot Noir or even a light California Cab.
And you know,
people joining us here real quick.
Oh, fabulous.
Say hi to John Pullum.
Hi, John.
Hi to Charlie. And
hi.
And Sherry Todd Davidek asking if we have any leftovers.
Oh, well, Sherry, yes, we will see if there are any leftovers after a while. There may not be, though, with this group, but we'll see, though. Yeah, thanks,
but
John.
But a question I had, too, like if you go to Trader Joe's, which I do like getting wine from Trader Joe's,
correct,
and it's inexpensive, mm-hmm, and the labels, you pick wines from labels, is that okay?
Absolutely. 80% of wine impulse purchasing is done by labels and price. And labels are very, very important. If it looks good, people gravitate to it. The second variable is price. If you're going into a wine store or into your favorite retailer, you know what your limit is within yourself. If a wine person or a customer service rep is coming up to you and saying, what are you looking for? I'm looking for a red wine. The tendency would probably be to drive it up a little bit, which is fine. But if it's a $50 wine that they're showing you and in your mind it's $20, you can tell them, what do you have that's very close to that for about half the price?
What's the difference between a $20 bottle of wine and a $50 bottle of wine?
It depends on the vineyard and the production of the wine. Obviously, with the larger producers, you're going to have a tendency of paying a little less for that wine. If it's a small boutique California, Michigan, or European vineyard, that their production is low, much more hands-on, less automated, you're going to be paying a little more of a premium
price.
Better
taste?
It's all personal. When you're dealing with winemakers, it's very similar to a culinary chef. They are very set, and they have a passion with what they're doing. So it's important that you don't go outside the realm of what you're listening to with what they're telling you. They might say it's the best wine under the sun, but if you don't like it personally, then you move on to something else.
Dean, would you ever drink wine out of a box?
Yes, I would. And I would drink wine out of a can, which is becoming more and more popular. And if you take a look at the buying trends in this country right now from coast to coast, that wine in a can is one of the fastest growing categories. I know it sounds a little crazy, but it started with
Charlie
the millennials.
Sneering.
It started with the millennials, and it's going into the Gen Z generation. Myself being kind of a baby boomer, we grew up with bottles with corks in it. So when the transition went to synthetic corks and then twist tops, I had to take a second look, but it's fine. It all works out. It's all personal
Does
preference.
Does it taste good? Wine out of a can?
Well, it's not bad, Charlie.
Really?
It is not bad. They've really perfected what they're putting to a can. From a perspective, when you have a wine party at your house and you come out with a six-pack of wine, it might not be a super hit.
Party's over.
It might be a little bit of a defamation to character for you coming out with a can wine. But in reality, if they were to pour that in a glass, Charlie, and you sipped it not knowing where it came from, You'd be amazed.
I would.
I love that you're not a wine snob, and we have all these California wines here. What about my California wine that's been sitting for 25 years for my 25th wedding anniversary? Is it still good, or is it going to be awful?
Oh, is it red or white?
Red.
It could still be good. We'd have to take a look at the exact vintage and what profile the wine is. A lot of people have a perception on red wines in particular that you buy it, and if you don't drink it, you can store it, and 5 years you pick it up, and then you open it up and you're very, very disappointed. Most wines are really made to be drank fairly quick. The ones that you hear about going at Christie's and Sotheby's for large dollars,
from Napoleon.
Those are Burgundies and Bordeaux from France, from Northern Italy. They're blending Tuscan wines now with Sangiovese is the grape of Tuscany, but the Super Tuscans are blended with Cabernet Merlot, which gives it a little more structure. So those you can hold for 10, 15 years without any problem. There's some California wines that you could get 10 or 15 years on. 25, I would say that you need to open that wine.
I'd say celebrate
time.
It's time.
It's time.
For people that might just be joining us.
Sure.
Yeah.
Roberta? What are we doing?
Sorry. I was thinking of drinking this wine. What we're doing is talking about, this is an elementary class on how not to be intimidated by wine or wine drinkers or wine snobs. By the time we're through with this, we're going to do a little tasting, a little explaining. You're going to know everything Charlie knows.
Oh, well, that won't take long. Well, why don't we get into it right now? We have a couple of glasses of wine. Should we start with some white wine? What are the basics about drinking a glass of white wine?
First of all, Dean, what is this?
The first wine that we have is Charles Krug Sauvignon Blanc. Sauvignon Blanc is the grape. This is a California wine from Napa. 2017. So it's relatively young, but that's okay.
What does it mean, young? I don't understand.
It's from the harvest to the crush to the bottles. 2017 is, you can still see it in our rearview mirror. It's not 10 years old. It's not 5 years old. It's still relatively new and relatively young. So that's, and with white wine, you can get away with drinking it very young like that.
So you're swirling your glass. Yeah. Well, should we do that?
Well, the first note and attribute that we want to take a look at is hold the glass up. And let's take a good look at the wine is there anything in particular that you see that is registering with your brain? So,
pretty bubbles.
We've got a nice, fairly clear, translucent wine, a little bit of a yellow tone to it. So what's happening right now is that our brain, from your past experience and what your sense and taste buds have experienced, is already registering what your eyes are telling it to focus in on.
What am I looking at here? I'm just looking at some, it looks like maybe some lemonade maybe, or if I didn't know what it was.
It's not lemonade.
It's not lemonade.
No.
Well, what should I be looking for?
Well, in this particular white wine, you want the clarity, the rim of the wine on the glass, so there's a little bit of translucent in there. And then looking through the wine, what color do you actually see? It's a little bit of a yellow tone,
no, I would say yellow.
which is exactly, with a little bit of maybe a green finish
green
on it. That's exactly what a Sauvignon Blanc should be.
Ah.
So now that that has happened, your brain's already got a pre-register of a little bit of what it can expect.
Yellow and green.
And exactly. And okay. The translucent, the clearness of this. So
okay.
Right now your brain's telling you that this is probably not a super, super heavy, dry wine.
Yeah. Right.
Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
The next element that we would like to do is you want to swirl the wine. And there's two ways of doing this. It sounds elementary, but there's two ways of doing it. If you're a neophyte or you're new into the wine and
yes.
you're at a restaurant, you can put the butt of the glass on a hard surface and just give it simple, easy
Ooh, I like
swirls.
That.
The potential for disaster is less when it's on the table.
Well, that could be. You never want your fingers to leave the stem of the glass as you're doing that. And the wine currently now is just circulating in the glass. The next level of swirling, Charles,
yes,
is
yes,
in yes. the air.
Yes,
same
uh-huh.
thing. Little more bougie. Hey, man, look. This is cool when you're doing this at a restaurant or a tasting, or you've got friends coming over and they see you doing this.
Yeah.
They're going like, "Whoa!"
What does the swirling do to the wine?
This wine is young, but as we get into the reds, this wine has been in that bottle for anywhere from 8 to 15 months if it's 2017. Oxygen hitting the surface of the wine is a good thing when the wine is first open. Mm. And what it's doing is it's bringing the wine to life. This wine's been a little dormant.
What does that mean, into life?
Oxygen is taking the dormant beverage that's been in that bottle that's just been sitting. And as soon as the oxygen hits it, it activates the ingredients, the grapes, and the next step of us smelling it, you're going to find out that the bouquet is coming alive.
Well, you can really smell it in this room now.
Yeah. And it's bringing the wine to life. But swirling is kind of a fun thing to do when everybody's around, just kind of swirling. A little bit.
We're swirling. That's Tom Jordan is looking in on us. We're swirling there, Tom.
And then the next level after that, and it doesn't have to, we don't have to do it for 10 or 15 minutes. It's a personal swirl. It depends if you're having conversation, who's at the table with you, what are you eating, is it hors d'oeuvres, is it a meal, is it just a social sit down. Any one of those, you could do a 30-second 15-20 minute swirl if that's what you're into.
So was this at room temperature then, or was this?
This was at 55 degrees, the white, but room temperature would be more for a red. The whites you'd want to have, you know, 50 would be a nice comfort zone for the whites. As it warms up, it's even going to come alive a little more. The next phase right after this is that you want to sniff or put your nose on the rim of the glass. Or you can put your nose in the glass. For those of us that can get our nose in the glass, and sometimes I have problems with that, but that's a good thing because now what we're going to pick up is now you're going to pick up what has come alive. This is very personal, and it doesn't make any difference who you're sitting in the room with. You're comparing your mental notes with everybody in the room to get a little bit of a check. Do I really pick up what I smell, or do I smell something different? Like, for example, on this Sauvignon Blanc.
Wait, before
everybody,
you answer that.
Yes.
I'd like to know, Charlie, you've been sniffing that like crazy over there.
Yeah.
What are you sniffing? What are you smelling?
Limes, lemons. Very clear to me. A lot of lime. A lot of, yeah, this to me is a very lime, a little lemony flavor to it.
Dean, is he correct?
He's right on. Yeah, there's definitely tones of lime. there's, you know, now, lime and lemon, very similar. You know, a little more citrusy on the lime. But what Charlie is picking up, if his smelling is saying he picks up lemon, then he's picking up lemon. If you're saying that it's more...
What are you smelling?
You
know, get your nose in
that
and smell it.
I did that, and yeah. All I smelled was wine. But now that you mentioned lemon and lime, now that I'm thinking that, I am picking up a little bit of that.
What about sugar? That's what it smells sugary to me.
I'm picking up...
Very floral, very floral
You, when you first put it on your taste bud, are you picking up any type of grapefruit, a little bit of the tart grapefruit before it goes into the lime?
Are we supposed to taste it?
Oh, yeah.
I hope.
Well, now we can taste it?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, good.
We just do a little taste or big taste?
Whatever you like.
Can we swirl it or what?
Well, we're going to put it on our tongue first and then...
Oh, we don't really... We don't
and then we can, and then we can... Eventually we will.
Too late. It's good.
So you put it on your tongue. It goes on both sides of your tongue. Yeah, so your definitely. Brain now has just registered with three elements
wow.
of going through the parameters.
I absolutely see grapefruit.
Now,
I taste the grapefruit.
Oh, what, seriously? What I oh, like yeah. to do.
I taste
very,
the lemon
very
now.
Citrusy, but it's that.
Maybe at the end, there's a little aftertaste of grapefruit for me.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
That's perfect. That you're right on. So now what, this is where it becomes personal again, but what I like to do is the first, I like to put the first sip on the tongue, both sides, so that the brain has registered with everything that it saw and smelled. And then I usually like to take a second sip and then go through the parameter of really getting it to go to the back of my palate so that I can really take a look and find out what this wine is really made of. And that goes similar to this.
Vicky's joining us.
A little bit of air over the liquid on your tongue. It gets it to move around. Or you don't have to do that. If that looked a little too complicated because it's tough to talk and do that, you can just put it in your mouth and kind of swish a little bit like you would with mouthwash. Get it on both sides of your tongue and then drink it.
It tastes grapefruit then. Is that?
There you go.
Yeah.
You're right on.
Yeah.
Yep. See, by doing this, if you were to open this bottle up, if you were sitting in a restaurant, somebody brought a bottle of wine or a glass of wine, and you took a quick sip, in conversation, you would miss half the luxuries of a bottle of wine or what's in that glass of wine only because there's so many distractions.
So let me ask, I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm distracted.
And by sitting down and going through this, it doesn't mean you have to do this every time you open up a bottle of wine or have a glass of wine at a restaurant, but what's so unique is that the more you do this, the more you program yourself and it becomes routine.
So this is a Sauvignon Blanc.
Yes.
Which is the grape, right?
It is the grape.
Okay, so would every Sauvignon Blanc, no matter what the label is, taste similar to this?
There would be a lot of common attributes, but not exactly the same.
So if you'd want something that is a little citrusy, probably a little easy to drink, you would look for a Sauvignon Blanc.
You would, correct.
I'm going to change grapes in a minute here, but if you want that citrusy, see, to me, I love white wine, but I don't, this is not my first choice because it's a little bit too citrusy.
What is your first choice?
I like Pinot Grigio.
Okay.
I mean, now there's some fantastic Chardonnays, but that's a little, the only thing about Chardonnay, so it's different grapes. We're talking grapes now. So this is Sauvignon Blanc grape. I like a Pinot Grigio. Or in Oregon, they make Pinot Gris. It's the same grape. It's a little drier, a little crispier. Doesn't have the citrusy flavor of this. I prefer that. This is a little too much for me, but this is very good. And I could have
I like this very much.
Yes, and a lot of people like Sauvignon Blanc. It's very, very popular. Would you say it's the most popular white, maybe?
No, Chardonnay is the most popular. Okay. Chardonnay by far is the most popular white, and it's the most popular poured wine at a restaurant.
Chardonnay, though, is a that's kind of a little snobby level up, because Chardonnays, then you get butter and creamier flavor. We should do it in all whites, maybe. Maybe that's what you were talking about. But to me, Chardonnay is fantastic.
How
wine.
Would you get butter?
Oh, whoa.
But where would that come from?
Well, it's the taste. Because it's creamy.
But where would the taste of butter come from?
The terroir, the earth.
When fermenting.
And how they make it. Do they make it in a oak barrel or a steel barrel? Now we're getting now with science of it. But that's the naked Chardonnays. It's not oak. It's a little crispier, more like a Pinot Gris. But if those oak barrels that they put the wine in, you do get a little buttery or maybe creamier flavors in a Chardonnay. Not so much in this one. But this is a pretty, I would say if you like this, Sauvignon Blanc, pretty much every label. Mm-hmm. And there are a little subtle differences, but that's what you want, Sauvignon Blanc.
Correct. And with Sauvignon Blanc,
dinner with this, Dean.
Well, this would more than likely be the intro into hors d'oeuvres and a lighter entree. You know, poultry. Turkey. Maybe even a veal if it wasn't overly spiced. Because what would happen is that if you get a food that's too heavy, this wine will get smothered right out. And Charlie's right on. That's why at the very beginning, when I said, take a look at this, what do we see? You can see right through it. It's light. There's not a lot of backbone to the wine. But that's the way the wine is structured to be made. And also with this wine, Charlie, even though it's got a little bit of a citric, that's typical from Sauvignon Blanc. You can experiment and do different things with wine, especially white wines. And I will tell you something that I do that isn't extremely popular with a lot of my wine aficionados is that I will throw an ice cube in this if it's a social function and I'm walking around to wind it down a little bit, because I could easily go through two or three glasses with an ice cube in there and not feel the effects. And that would wind down a little bit of the citrus on it. Now, if you were doing a tasting and you're pairing off with food, you probably wouldn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. And my preference on whites, I just prefer them a little colder.
Colder than 55? You put them in the fridge cold?
I might, yes.
Really?
Okay. Now, I think, though, that as they warm up, you get a little more flavor.
True, exactly.
But that's why I like a very crisp white without a lot of flavor. This, to me, has a lot of flavor. It's a very good wine. Sauvignon Blanc is a very good wine.
Charles Krug makes a phenomenal bottle. They've been making wine for a long time. They make a number of different varietals. But Sauvignon Blanc, their Sauvignon Blanc and their whites are one of my favorites. But on a conclusive note with this, doesn't this feel like it's cleansing your palate?
Yes.
It's fresh. It's
crisp.
Wonderful.
It's not overly whelming. It's very pleasant to drink.
So let me throw something out there. If we were doing a dinner,
yes,
a typical American dinner, salad first, main meal, and maybe dessert. Very simple. Would you say this wine would go, and the first, we're going to pair wine with it. Would this go nice with a salad?
This would be perfect for a salad.
Yeah, green.
And even just sipping wine before you even get into light hors d'oeuvres, and then before you get into your salad, this would be absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Everything you've talked about, it reminds me of this mindfulness movement. Be mindful of what you're doing. And instead of going to a party, pouring a glass of wine and drinking it like crazy and not paying attention, what you're telling us is to pay attention to the wine, and it really enhances the experience.
Absolutely. And that's what it's really all about. We get caught up in a little bit of a fast pace between work and family and social functions. But this beverage goes back 6,000 years B.C. So it's not like it was invented here in the United States.
Wow.
It goes back 6,000 years B.C. And through the whole transition of before Christ and A.D., here we are today, 8,000 years later, drinking the same beverage coming from grapes in a vineyard grown by earth to to satisfy our palate.
Why don't we try a different? Let's move on to the next wine. How about that?
Which what do we have here?
The second wine is a Pinot Noir Migration, California, and it's one of the labels from the Duckhorn Vineyard Migration. I brought
migration,
this along.
Duckhorn, get it?
Yeah,
migration,
I brought this along because this is a very easy, middle-of-the-road red wine. So, Pinot Noir, very, very approachable. It's not going to overwhelm us, but we want to go through the parameters again. Now, we're back at a restaurant, sitting down. You just ordered a glass of Pinot Noir. The sommelier or the person attending the table just put down this glass of wine, or possibly you bought a bottle and you just poured it. What we want to do, whether you make a scene doing it, or you're having friends with whoever you're socially eating with, or you're just doing it on your own, you can pick up that glass and let's look through and see what we see. On the rim of the wine touching the glass, do you see a little bit of a white line on the rim there?
A little bit, yes.
And then as you look further down, you go into a deeper ruby red. And if you put this, if we were to put this up with a white background, you'd even get a little more of the color tones.
What's the white rim? What does that mean?
It's telling you a little bit about the structure of the wine, the alcohol content. It's giving us a little bit of a pretext of what our palate is going to register. Right now, it's the eyes first. The eyes are registering to the brain saying, that's really a nice, smooth, consistent, well-balanced color. And it looks like it's going to be very, very interesting to put on our tongue. So your brain is right now is getting a little bit of a pre-register of, you know, what to expect with this. I also, with reds, I have a tendency of looking to see if there's any cork particles in there. Some people freak out. It's not that big of a deal. Take a spoon, you know, take them out. And I also, with reds, look to see if there's any sediment that might be on the bottom of the glass. And, you know, people also go, oh, my God, there's something floating in the bottom. You know, what is that? It's just sediment from the wine, you know, during its fermentation in oak barrels and old French oak barrels. You get a little bit of that that goes into the wine as it's fermenting. It's not that big of a deal. If it bothers you that much, to take a spoon, just take it out and you're good to go. You don't
and
have to send the bottle
always
back.
Always hold your glass by the stem, never by the bowl of the glass.
Well, with red wines, that's a great question. With red wines, it's once again personal, but the minute you start taking a red wine and you on these glasses, which are more of a Bordeaux Burgundy style glass, and you put your hand on the bottom and start palming the bottom part of the bowl, we're at 96.8 our human body temperature, the wine's going to start to warm up. Right now, this wine is at around 55. So when we first taste this, we're going to taste one style of Pinot Noir. If we were to be sitting here enjoying dinner a half hour later, as it warms up, either by room temperature or your hand, you're going to be tasting same wine, but you're going to be tasting a different style.
That's amazing.
What wine is this again?
This is the Migration Pinot Noir.
So the grape is Pinot Noir.
Correct. Estate grown. Duckhorn is the vineyard. And this is their Migration Pinot Noir.
So now let's put our... So we looked at it. Now we're going to put our nose into it.
We're going to swirl it. Let's especially on the reds. We have to wake them up.
Okay. So we're swirling it around and we're putting oxygen into this, or is that what we're doing?
The oxygen's hitting the surface of the wine, which is a good thing. A lot of people say, oh my God, air is hitting the wine. It's going to go bad. For a short period of time, it's a good thing. It wakes it up, and it's going to bring all the aromatic aromas and flavors to the top and throughout the wine. It's balancing it from the top to the bottom. So once again, on the swirling, you can either do the tabletop or you can do the bourgeois and the hand up in the air here. But either way works very, very efficiently and very, very well. Then we want... especially on the reds, we're really going to pick up some nice attributes as you put your nose on the rim or put your nose in this glass and see what your nose picks up.
I've got, to me, it's a little caramely flavor. to me. A light caramel? Definitely, I get that.
To me, it just smells like wine, but I mean, I don't know anything about wine. I'm not picking up any caramel or anything.
Are you picking up a raspberry? Any red berries?
Okay, maybe like cherry for an instant.
Perfect. That's exactly right. A red, ripe grape. It could be a cherry. It could be a raspberry. It could be pomegranate, but that's exactly what your brain's registering, because that's what you've had in the past and your brain has experienced and comparing it to. That's one of the definitely the attributes to this wine. There's some raspberry in here. There's a little bit of wood. The first thing that I picked up is which we didn't discuss, is I could pick up a little bit of the alcohol coming up. This is like a 14.5% Pinot Noir. Many years ago, anything over 9 was like a big deal. But this is the norm. You know, 12 to 14% is the norm. So I do pick up a little bit of the alcohol, and that tells me that these grapes were somewhat more of a late harvest on the ripe side to get all those attribute tones in here that we're picking up right now with our nose. So on the nose, any ripe berry, you'd be pretty much right on. Now, the next part of sipping and tasting it, you can put it on your tongue, swallow it, and then go back and do a little thorough tasting, or you can just do it right at the beginning. That's where you're going to pick up. That's where your taste buds with your visual and your sense of smell is going to register on your brain, and your brain's going to put the pieces of the puzzle together and say, this, I either like this or it's not my style of wine. And if you like it, your brain's going to send you a signal saying, I pick up a little bit of raspberry. I pick up a little bit of tobacco. On the finish, the more it sits on my palate, I pick up a little bit of maybe a vanilla. But more than anything,
slight vanilla.
Is it smooth? Is it overwhelming? Is it acidic? Is it balanced? What is your brain registering from what your tongue is and your palate is telling it? And we're going to soon find out.
Smooth to me. Really
very
nice.
Smooth. Oh, this is a
piece. Are you getting any type of flavors from
it? Maybe sort of a wood sort of. I mean, again, no expert, but I don't smell the raspberry. It's more, I taste like a kind of a little bit of a wood flavor.
Yep. You're picking that up. And during the fermenting of this wine in the barrels, that's what your palate's picking up. It's you know, your tongue, your palate is tuned in to that. Charlie's and everybody else might have a different perspective on what your taste buds are picking up. It really based on what your brain has been nurtured during your youth to where you're at right now and what it's experiment. If your brain has never experienced a flavor like this before, then you're on an unguided path because you're setting a new precedent. But you've had all these tastes before in either food or beverage of some sort or another, whether it's alcohol or even a soda, and it's all being registered now, and now it's being focused because your visual eyesight told your brain what you're looking at. So you know it's wine, you know it's Pinot Noir. Your sense of smell has told the brain, this is comparing with what we saw, and now your palate is balancing and putting this whole piece of the puzzle together. And then the final equation to the bottom line is, do you personally like this or not? Because that's what it's all about. Just because it's appealing to me might not be appealing to somebody else, or somebody might say, well, this is the best wine I've ever had. But this is a very easy, approachable, medium-bodied wine to drink. Would we agree to that?
Yes.
I would buy this.
You know,
this
Dean, you make drinking wine almost seem like making love.
Woo. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Truly.
I'll drink to that.
Cheers. Anyway, Dean Champagne, thank you so much for being here. We've got to wrap it up.
Sure.
Now, what is your newsletter? Is it winetime.com?
Winetime.com. Dave Berninski and myself are the writers. We've got a number of other people on our staff that help us write. But it's Detroit-based, and from 2 years of coming out of retirement, it gives us something to do, and it's something I've always had a passion for. It's, you know, this is not work to me. It's It's a lot of fun, and it's an ever-learning experience. Hmm. Anyone that ever says they know everything there is to know about wine, you have to have a second doubt on, because you just don't.
Hey, Charlie, how about a toast for Dean Champagne?
I think and Dean Charlie. Champagne, really. Dean Champagne, the Pinot Noir, one of my favorites. Cheers to you
cheers
for helping
you.
Us understand a little bit about drinking wine, approaching wine, and don't be afraid of wine. Enjoy it.
Enjoy
cheers.
It. Cheers. Cheers.